you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Monty Poole, and I'm the Warriors Insider at NBC Sports Bay Area, and I'm inviting you to join me on the latest Warriors Insider podcast. Our guest, a man whose name is synonymous with gambling in sports, cheating in sports, and a man who actually did serve some federal time for his sins as an NBA referee. The man's name, Tim Donaghy. You may or may not remember him, but you should, because he is perhaps the most infamous referee in NBA history. As of right now, the man is promoting a movie called Inside Game, due out in theaters in November. I saw the trailer. It's pretty good. And I would say my time with Tim also was pretty enlightening. Talked about a number of things from his history, his past, and the number of things he's up to today. And actually what he does think of that 2002 Western Conference Finals between the Lakers and the Sacramento Kings. Here we go. Welcome to the Warriors Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area, brought to you by Wendy's. I'm your host, Monty Poole. Today, we're going to talk about the Warriors. We're going to talk about the NBA, and we're going to talk about a movie that I think any NBA fan and any fan of movies might want to go out and check out. The movie is called Inside Game, starring Will Sasso, Scott Wolf, Eric Mabius. And the movie is based on the experiences of one NBA referee, former NBA referee Tim Donaghy, who I happen to have on the line right now. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Thanks for having me.
Good. Happy to have you, man. Happy to have you. Now, first of all, I saw the trailer for the movie, and it does look interesting. It looks almost ominous. Tell me, how did this project come about in terms of just getting this thing together?
Basically, Tommy Martino, who was involved in the scheme with James Batista and myself, has a cousin, Paul Martino, who is a venture capitalist out of Silicon Valley. And he loved the whole story, and he put together a cast of writers and producers and Michael Pierce and Battenkoff out of L.A. and a writer, Andy Callahan, and just started the project. I think it was probably about 7 or 8 years ago, and they had a lot of problems along the way of getting it done and different issues, but they fought hard to continue to get it done and put a great cast of actors together that they were just given an award for at the San Diego Film Festival. So they fought hard to get it done. They did a great job and they put a great product out there that I think people are really going to enjoy.
Now, when you say they fought hard to get it out there, I guess what comes to mind initially for me is, should I assume there was resistance from the NBA?
I'm sure there was, because when you talk about the NBA going into the offices of Random House and the offices of 60 Minutes with their attorneys to try to block anything that's going to come out in regard to that story and really had my book squashed. It's definitely something that they don't want out there, and I'm sure that they're going to do everything possible with their marketing machine to have this come and go as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Now, you've seen the movie, I assume.
I've seen it a couple times, and each time I see it, it grows on me more and more, and it makes me laugh harder and harder. I will say that it was embarrassing back in 2007 when I started to get into trouble, and to see it all play out in a Hollywood movie is just as embarrassing, even though it's 10 years later. So it is funny, though. It is a lot of times where you're laughing, a lot of times where you want to cry, and a lot of times where you just want to watch it again, and rewatch a scene because it was so funny. So I think, like I said, people are going to enjoy it.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, having watched the movie several times, how true to fact is it? I mean, how much of it is dramatized and how much of it is on point as to what actually happened, roughly?
You know, when you talk about a movie like that, they always have to have, Hollywood it up, I like to say, a little bit, to add some flavor to it. And that was a major concern of mine, to be honest with you. But they did an excellent job in sticking to the script and basically just showing you how three high school friends came together, made some poor choices, and those poor choices affected a lot of people around them, including the people they love the most, and that's their family. So, they did a good job of, sticking to the story for the most part. A couple things here and there, but nothing that really, makes it something that just isn't true.
You know, when you say you're three high school friends, take me back to high school and what happened among the three of you from the time you guys met, whether it's before high school or in high school, until the time this started.
Yeah, Tommy Martino and I actually have been friends from very early on. Our brothers were friends. Batista and I really didn't hang out or know each other that well. So the connection was Tommy and myself, and we've just been very good friends from an early age. We love to hang out with each other. We love to laugh and joke around. It's something that, was portrayed well in the movie. Tommy is certainly a character, whether he's on the screen in Hollywood or he's at his house right now today. He's just somebody that everyone likes. And, he's recently written a book called Inside Game also, and it's already in its second printing, and it's done very well. So he's kind of the guy that, told the story. It's from his versions of events, and he did a great job doing it.
Now you are the son of a referee, correct?
Yes, my father, Jerry, was one of the top college basketball referees in the country and did the Final Four several times in the 1990s. So when I started refereeing, I had a foot already in the door, so to speak, because my dad was so well-liked and did such a good job at the college level.
Now tell me what happened first. You becoming a referee, are you gambling?
Definitely becoming a referee. I didn't gamble until I was in the league several years and started to become members of a couple clubs in the Philadelphia area and hanging out on the golf course. Just became addicted to the action of gambling on the golf course for cards in the locker room or jumping in a and heading down to Atlantic. So all those things, really got me involved in gambling and then started on professional sports. So I made one bad choice and one line after another. I've been crossing because of my job as NBA referee, because it was a contract that I wasn't allowed to play of any kind. So for a reason, I just made some bad choices and continue to cross lines that I wish I didn't go around.
Now, tell me what happened. How did this, the very first time that you can recall, how did this come about? I mean, did it start with somebody coming to you and proposing something, or how did it first happen?
Just really hanging out at the golf course, and my buddy had the Philadelphia Daily News. I had just come from home, and I saw who was refereeing the games that night because I had the master list of referees, and he flipped me the Daily News, and he says, come on, pick me a couple of winners in the NBA. I quickly, looked at it, rattled off three games. He called me the next day laughing because they all won. And basically what I was doing is I was using relationships that existed in the NBA between referees and coaches, referee and players, and referees and owners. And I knew that out on the floor that, if the line was a certain number, sometimes it was off by 3, 4, or 5 points. And that's how I started picking the games in the NBA.
Now, you say relationships between referees and coaches. How exactly does that work? Are you saying that there are coaches and referees that kind of work, referees that favor certain coaches?
Absolutely. The relationships were positive or negative. Steve Javy hated Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson hated Steve Javy. Mark Cuban and Joe Crawford had major problems. Danny Crawford and the Dallas Mavericks had major problems. So there were always relationships out there that were positive or negative. And, with that being said, it spilled out onto the floor. I can remember Mike Mathis having major problems with Charles Barkley. So, and there were other guys like Derek Stafford who went out to dinner with Charles Barkley. So there was always positive or negative things that spilled out onto the floor. And unfortunately, the lines were off at some points, and I took advantage of that.
Did you have any relationships with any coaches or players that you were particularly, I don't know, fond of, close to, or any way like that?
Sure. I mean, I like David Robinson. I like Steve Nash. I liked, you know, a lot of the players that played at Villanova University and would always joke around about, you know, have you, you know, texted or called Father Rob lately, who was the chaplain that sits on the Villanova bench that really is the glue to that whole program there. So there were a lot of things, you know, positive and negative, you know, that you witnessed in relationships, and I think that spilled out onto the floor with how the game was officiated.
Yeah. Now, how did you know when the jig was up? I mean, how did you know that, I'm in trouble now?
I was getting ready to test out a new pair of ping irons I just got. Tommy Martino called me and said that the FBI had been at his house three times, and at that point I knew we were in a lot of trouble, and I knew that I was going to be the big fish in this whole thing. So, you know, with that phone call, I really hit the panic button, and for 30 days, I didn't eat or drink anything. I lost about 30 pounds and went to an attorney and spoke to an attorney, and he told me just to sit tight. But the guilt and, you know, the way it weighed on my mind, I just couldn't take it. And he actually called up the United States attorney that was working the case, and he gave me the message from the guy. And the guy said, basically, you tell Tim Donaghy we know what he did. We know who he did it with. It's only a matter of time before we come in and arrest him. He's going to lose his job. But if he wants to come up here and talk to us before we come down there and get him, he'll be better off, because if we have to come get him, not only is he going to lose his job, but he's going to go to jail for a long, long time. And with that being said, I think the pressure that they put on me, you know, is shown very well in the movie Inside Game, and they're able to show how the FBI was involved and the pressure that they put on a lot of us to basically let them know what we did and how we did it.
You are listening to the voice of former NBA ref Tim Donaghy on the Warriors Insider podcast, brought to you by Wendy's. We're talking about the movie Inside Game and just Tim's experiences both that led to the movie, and we'll get into some things that maybe you're in now right now. But go back to when the FBI basically says, your attorney says you're better off coming in and talking to the FBI, which is the way it kind of turned out. Now, take me through the court process, because I understand that, you know, once you saw it coming, you sort of you apologized in court. What did you say in court once this thing reached a conclusion?
You know, the bottom line was, is as we discussed earlier, I made some poor choices, crossed some lines I shouldn't have been around. I disappointed my family, you know, my children and my coworkers at the NBA league office. So I wanted everybody to know that I was definitely sorry for what I did. You know, and with that being said, I paid a dramatic price for it. I had family issues. I had, you know, spent 15 months in a federal prison because of it. I lost my job. I basically had to rebuild my entire life because of what I did. So I think that's the best part of the whole movie, that, you know, they really show how this not only affected each and every one of us, but how it affected our families, especially with Tommy Martino and myself and the relationships that we had with our fathers. So, you know, that's the best part of the movie in the entire thing, and that's why I really liked it.
I know you and your wife broke up during this time, and you guys have four daughters, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so obviously that's another major issue that happened at that time. Now, I understand, too, that when you were in prison, that you got run up on a couple of times, that you were jumped. Is that correct?
It is. When you go in prison and across every TV before you go in, the cooperating witness for the government, quickly labeled a snitch, and that's something that you want heading into federal prison. So there was a guy who kept claiming he said it with the Gambino crime, was giving me a hard time. So one day he had a paint rolling pole and damage to my knee by smacking a couple times. And you know, with that being said, I've had two options on my knee to try to alleviate pain, and to this day it still bothers me. So that was definitely a difficult time, and it was difficult to get through the federal prison system. But with the help of, you know, family and friends, I was able to do it.
Do you think you were to lack, for lack of a better term, do you think you were scapegoated?
You know, no. I mean, I definitely did something that I deserved to be punished for, and I think if I, you know, look in the mirror, I have to hold myself accountable for those poor choices. I do think that the NBA could have accepted some culpability in the situation because the way, you know, they were training and programming the referees at that time was something that wasn't right, especially during the playoff series. So, you know, for me to say that it was somebody else's fault, I don't, you know, that's really not how I'm built. I want to accept responsibility for what I did. But with that being said, I think it could have been handled much differently by the NBA.
When you say that, what do you mean?
Well, the NBA wanted to charge us $225,000 for restitution to them for their investigation in the entire situation, which I personally paid. I just think that they could have accepted responsibility and said that there were some issues with what they were doing and how they were doing it, and they're going to correct it. They didn't come out and say that, but behind the scenes, I do believe that they've made an enormous amount of changes.
Let me say, pause to take a moment to say hello to a friend. Hi, Wendy. And I say hi, Wendy, because I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking about the chicken sandwiches you can get at Wendy's. I'm thinking about the chili. I'm thinking about, of course, the Frosties. You should also consider thinking about Wendy's, because Wendy's is the place to go when you want something fresh, hot, and healthy. And believe me, the chili, hard to beat. Wendy's chili. So, again, saying hello to our sponsor, Wendy's, and we thank Wendy for always being there for us. Now, let me change topics a little bit here, and I know in Northern California, especially in the Sacramento area, there are some very sore feelings about the 2002 Western Conference Finals. We've been hearing it for years and years and years, and the Kings fans think, obviously, they got robbed, and you look at some of the numbers, and you think they may have a case. From where you sit and with what you know, what went down in the 2002 Western Conference Finals between the Lakers and the Kings, specifically Game 6?
You know, no doubt in my mind the Sacramento Kings should have a ring on their finger. They were the best team in the league that year. That Game 6 was definitely a situation where towards the end of that game they got robbed. Dick Bavetta was on that game, and he claimed several times to several of us that he was the NBA's go-to guy. He was put on Game 6s to force Game 7s. And, you know, I think there's no doubt in my mind, or a lot of people from the inside of the NBA, they know that, you know, they gave the Lakers the benefit of several calls in that game, you know, thinking it was just going to go to a Game 7 and Sacramento was going to win on their home floor. The Lakers win. They win the championship, and really it's unfortunate for Sacramento because they should definitely have a ring on their finger.
Yeah, I looked back and I checked the numbers, and the Kings shot 9 free throws in the fourth quarter of Game 6. The Lakers shot 27 free throws in the fourth quarter. It's so lopsided, it makes you wonder, even if you're totally unfamiliar with what happened in that series. The game was in L.A., Game 6, and the Lakers had, they were struggling a little bit, and they scored, they outscored the Kings in that fourth quarter, and then, of course, came back to win Game 7 in Sacramento. And I was at Game 7 in Sacramento that day, and I will tell you, I've never been in a building where I've seen so many fans so frustrated, so angry. So I literally saw a grown man run out of the arena screaming. It was hard to watch. And again, like I said, people in Sacramento, the Kings fans up there, they are still extremely sore about that. And that was 17 years ago. So it's certainly a sore spot in their franchise history. And one of those things that you look at the Kings and you say they've never really recovered since then. And there's a case can be made for that. So Tim, do you still watch NBA games?
I do from time to time. I tune in and see guys that I came in with that are still there running up and down the floor. And, you know, it's tough to turn off because it was a part of my entire life. And, you know, I still love to watch it from time to time.
Those of us who cover the league, we always whisper and talk about how the superstars get a certain whistle and other guys don't get it. Tell me, from your experience, whether it's you or your colleagues that were in the profession there, what's your take on guys getting whistles and some guys getting whistles and some guys not getting whistles?
There's no doubt that there's star treatment. It's discussed in the locker rooms and the meetings that, you know, obviously people don't pay an enormous amount of money to sit in those courtside seats to see players like Kobe, LeBron, Shaq, all the greats sit on the bench and be in foul trouble. So you're trained and programmed to give those fouls that you can to other people on the team if there's somebody in that area of the play. And if they're going to the basket and there's something where there's contact, you're going to give them the benefit of the calls and the cheap fouls and cheap calls and create a flow to the game that's, something that's going to create high scoring and excitement. And
yeah.
That's what the officials do.
Do you understand that because of where you've been, I mean, you served your time and lost your job, lost your family in some ways, and all these lost a lot of friends, that people will say, well, Tim Donaghy is a bitter man. He's upset at what happened to him and don't believe what he says, which is kind of what David Stern was trying to say, a few years back when this was going down. And I look at this and I say, well, at this stage, what reason do you really have to lie or be bitter? Just defend yourself in terms of your own credibility for me, please.
Absolutely. I don't really need to bury the NBA. I just want the truth to be known about what I did and how I did it. But the bottom line is I was very lucky that Phil Scala, who was the supervisory special agent for the Gambino squad out of New York and the lead investigator, wrote the foreword for my book and said in that foreword that I told the truth at every turn. So I don't know what more can be said to get myself credibility. And when David Stern initially came out and made a lot of comments about me, after they did their own investigation and did some things, he really never came out and said anything negative about me. He just wanted the story to go away as quickly and fast as possible. So with that being said, I think that having the foreword written by Phil Scala and what he wrote in the foreword of my book, Personal Foul, speaks volumes for me and what I did and the cooperation that I gave them and what I did to try to help the NBA turn around the way they did business. So to me, I hope that it was something that helped them.
You look at the NBA specifically now and in sports in general, and you're seeing legalized betting in many more places than you saw it a few years ago. From where you sit, obviously gambling is making inroads in sports. What do you make of the partnerships, really, that are happening now between sports and gambling?
The bottom line is the NBA is going to do whatever they can do to create more revenue. Who knows how much they're going to lose from this whole China deal. And with gambling, it's a way to replace that revenue. And at some point, you're going to see the ability for a fan sitting in a seat to bet, swiping his credit card, and, bet whether James Harden's going to score 10 three-pointers or not that night. It's going to keep fans interactively in the seats, even when there's a 20-25 point blowout. So there's a lot of things that are going to happen moving forward with gambling that are going to be positive for the NBA, including creating a large revenue stream.
But isn't there a danger to this?
There's a danger with everything.
Yeah.
The bottom line is that you need to educate and let everybody know the dangers of it, just like you let them know the dangers of alcohol or drugs or anything else that can be some form of an addiction. So as long as you're educating people, I think that it's something that could be a positive thing for everybody.
Yeah. You mentioned alcohol. Would you describe yourself as a gambling addict?
For sure. There's no doubt that, I did some really dumb things. And when you talk about how and why, there's no other, real logical reason for other than the fact that I was addicted to gambling.
So there are people who think gambling is a disease, and there are people who think gambling is a personal problem. Your experience, is it a little bit of both? I mean, what's your take on just addiction in general?
I think it's a little bit of both for sure. You can make arguments either way, but the bottom line is people don't do and make poor decisions like I did unless that there's some form of an addiction involved in it. And I'm not here to argue or fight for it either way. My time has come and gone. There's no excuses that are going to make this situation any better. So You know, again, in the movie, you really see how it affected, you know, all of us. And there's drugs in the movie. There's gambling in the movie. So there's a lot of things that you're going to see that are going to be great for, you know, young adults to see to show that you got to stay on the straight and narrow.
Did this experience that you went through, did that break you of your addiction?
For sure. I mean, I had gotten some help with it, you know, and again, you know, when you go through something that, like I went through, and you see the effect that it had not only on yourself, but the people you love the most, and that's your family, you know, you're able to, you know, realize what you did and how it affected others, and it really helps you to stay on the straight and narrow.
So looking back now from where you sit, I believe you're 52 now?
Yes.
Okay. Looking back now on the entire experience that you had there, I'm sure there are some things you would wish you could do different, but where would you begin on the things that you would do differently?
Well, I mean, listen, you can't turn back time. If you could, you know, I'd be the first one in line begging for that opportunity. You know, obviously I wouldn't have gotten involved in gambling. I wouldn't have hung out with a cast of characters that probably I shouldn't have been hanging out with, so... you know, there's a lot of changes that you would make, but you know, number one is I would have stayed away from gambling and hung out with you know, some people that probably wouldn't have helped push me to the decision making that I did.
Wow, yeah, that's Tim Donaghy, former NBA referee, and the movie coming out is Inside Game, starring Will Sasso. You may know Will from Mad TV, or he played Curly in the Three Stooges movie a couple of years ago. Also in the movie is Scott Wolf on Party of Five, if you watch that on TV, and Eric Mabius, who was on Ugly Betty on TV, and also The L Word on Showtime, and also Eric was also in the initial Resident Evil, and he is playing you, Tim. And here's why I bring that up. Eric Mabius was once on People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive list. And now he's playing you in a movie. Is that a feather in your cap?
I don't know. I would think so. I didn't know that took place, but that's good to know. When I see him next week, I'm going to break his chops about that. But you know, I'm going to tell you something. Will Sasso, who plays Batista in the movie, does a job like I've never seen before in my life. It's almost like Batista played the part himself. So I really believe that he is going to get some type of award. With the performance that he did.
Well, the movie again is Inside Game, coming to theaters across the nation on Friday, coming up November 1st. If you, again, if you're a fan of the NBA or you're curious about what went on during that time, it's a movie you should go out and see. I saw the trailer, and the trailer tells me I should go see the movie. So I look forward to that possibility. Tim, I want to thank you for giving us some of your time and talking about the movie and just your experiences with the NBA. What you've had to deal with, and again, we appreciate your time.
I appreciate you having me, and like I said, I think just real quick, there's a great message in the movie about personal choices for everybody, and Paul Martino, and you know, a lot of the characters that he put together did an excellent job, and I think that people are really going to enjoy it. So I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Folks, you've been listening to the Warriors Insider podcast brought to you by Wendy's. If you haven't already, please visit Apple Podcasts or Google Play to subscribe. If you like our podcast, give us a rating and a review. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at NBCS Authentic. We will be back shortly with another great guest. Thanks for tuning in.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.